Hello and welcome to the Beer Nuts Productions podcast. My name is Goff, and today we are joined by a very special guest, a man who has been in the entertainment industry longer than I've even been alive, ladies and gentlemen. I wasn't even thought of when this man was treading the boards. It is a hilarious comedian. It's Col Elliott.
That's a great intro. Thanks, mate. Yeah. I never thought of that. Yeah, you wouldn't have been born, eh? I remember doing the warm-ups for your dad. Way back before you were even born. So
you're an old fart.
I am, mate. I'm 71 years old. I can't believe it. 71, unbelievable. I know. I was very lucky to get here, I think. I'm here, mate.
Well, I must say, you're not looking well, and I'm worried about you. I've got to be honest. I'm worried.
You know what you're looking at. I know what you're looking at. For anybody listening, I've let the COVID turn me grey. I've gone totally white, and I didn't realise how much I was putting in a bottle until Kevin Bloody Wilson rang me and he said, I'm just doing this new poster. And I said, I had a look and I said, how much are you putting in a bottle? You know, how much are you? Because he's 70, he's 3 years older than me.
Right.
So there you go. No, we're all white, really. Rodney Rood. He looks like he could do Father Christmas bits.
I've seen him recently.
He does look like a bit of a smurf, doesn't he?
Now, Col, we do have a mutual acquaintance in your brother, Ralph Elliott.
Uncle Ralph, yeah.
And now, Ralph says the most hurtful and awful things about you, Col. Just for people who are listening, Ralph has been, he's not only your brother, but he's been your tour manager for like 30-odd years.
Oh, yeah, well, I call him a tour manager. He's really the merch bitch. He's the merch. I put him on the merch and say, and I'll make, you know what I do? I make him sit up the back of the room because he doesn't smile. I mean, I'll do a one-liner, you know, I'll come out and say, I just got back from Greece. I was really upset in Greece. I got a bit of a tummy ache and I went to the hospital in Greece and it was all in Greek and then I saw a sign that said English-speaking doctor. I thought, what a great idea. We should have that here, you know, and he'll look at me and nothing. So I don't look at him. I send him up the back of the room. If there's a new line there, I don't want to see his face. I said, you turn around, face the wall. Let him sell the merchandise.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, you now have a forum for your right of reply for all that horrible things that Ralph has said about you over the years.
Mate,
You now have your platform for a rebuttal.
Well, I have. And he, he's my elder brother.
Yes.
And he and I grew up, we had each other's back when we were kids. We grew up pretty poor. But he's a great guy. And I take him on the road and we laugh constantly. He's got the most ridiculous sense of humour and it's great. It suits me well, you know. So when I go on the road, he loves it, you know, he enjoys it, yeah. And we're both ex-military. He did 14 years in the Army.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about because you were a Navy man.
Navy boy, I joined when I was 16, HMAS Lewin in Perth. And I was 16 years old. I went to sea at 17. They sent me to Vietnam at 17. No one asked me how old I was. They did halfway through it. And they said, you're not supposed to be here. It's too bloody late. I turned 18 2 months before I came home. So I'm one of the, I think there's a couple of us. I'm probably one of the youngest three to ever go to Vietnam and serve. And I was on loan to the Americans. And we came under fire a lot, and it scared the crap out of me actually. But I was 18 when I come home at 18. All my mates are still playing in the band, in the court, taking in their chicks to the dance, and I couldn't relate to anybody. I'd been in the Navy a couple of years. So it is 7 years. I ended up a recruit school instructor. I taught seamanship, navigation, NBCD, nuclear, biological, chemical defence. I did all that sort of stuff, and 7 years. And I travelled the world. It was great.
Firstly, thank you for your service, but also how then do we go from being in the Navy and being at Vietnam to being on the stage doing stand-up comedy?
They said, a sailor, he's a joke. No, it wasn't like that. In places like Singapore and Hong Kong, Bangkok, Kuala Lumpur, Penang, all those sort of places I travelled, and Japan and all those, we were broke, constantly broke, the guys, because we got like 30 bucks a fortnight or something ridiculous. Anyway, we were in a place called Nee Soon, and I was picking a bit of guitar at the time, and writing the songs like, you know, Who Put the Sand in the Vaseline, You'll Never See a Roof Rack on a Hearse, all that sort of stuff, you know. I was writing all the good stuff, and Lipstick on Your Dipstick, all that, you know, wonderful stuff. And I was doing a few gags and that, and I had this guitar, and we were in Neesoon, and my mate said, we should form a band called. So we called ourselves the New Neesoon City Ramblers Jug and Jazz Band, and we had a soapbox bass. We had a washboard that we made out of one of the plaques in the engine room. We knocked that off, and we formed this band, and we used to knock out stuff like, well, you can rag a tune right through the knees of a brand new pair of BVDs, you know, all that sort of stuff. And I had so much fun doing it. And when I got out of the Navy, I carried my guitar out. That's all I basically had. I didn't have much else. And a little while after that, Karen and I got married, and I needed tyres for my car. I was driving a 1953 anniversary Ford with Angry Anderson tyres. They were bald. They were worse than you are, Goff. They had no strands at all. And a copper picked me up. He said, son, what are you doing with this car? And then when he noticed that the driver's door was held on by a dog collar,
Jesus,
he said, I think we've got to get this off the road. So I eventually, cutting a long story short, I went on Kevin Dennis' New Faces,
okay,
which was 1973, I think, and it was the same show that Hoag's, not the same night, but show that Hoag's went on,
yep.
And everybody did it, and I went on there to ostensibly to get the money, which was $500 for the first prize for the championship, and then you got the runner up, the semifinals, $250, and I won the $500 with a bit of Navy comedy just toned down a bit.
Well, I tell you what, and, back in 1970, $500 would be like 10 grand, mate, right now.
A lot of money, and you know, like 45 years later, I got a garage full of tyres, so I'm all right. I don't need the tyres anymore. So that's what started it, yeah.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And but for those people who might be listening to overseas who don't know much about Cole, a lot of your comedy is based on character-based comedy.
Yeah. Oh, it is. A lot of it is.
So I'm curious to know if you could take one of your characters if you could just tell us how you go about making it, you know, the voice and the character how it comes to be.
Okay. The character, the very first one started with, I was always able to do accents. When I was a kid, the bloke next door, he come from North Country, you know, it's all like that. He said, you're right then, son, you're okay. You know, he's a lovely guy. And then the other guy up the road, he was from Glasgow, you know, you call him, where you turn, son, you know. And I'd listen to that.
You reckon that's your music background? You've got a good ear?
I think it might be because and a little Irish fella lived round the corner, and he was a Mr. O'Shea. He was a lovely fella. And I could do it. And my mate's father, who was Italian, he said, hello, Cole. Why do you want to come for tea tonight? We're going to have spaghetti. He was a lovely guy. So when I started creating characters, I created, the first one was Giuseppe, who was, he described a game of Aussie rules football, and he thought the umpire's name was, hi, you bloody mug, he's the bloke who owns the ball. So I recorded that, and it took off. Bert Newton picked it up, and Ernie Siglin, and Mike Walsh, and I went on the TV, and this Italian, I was dressed as an Italian in gumboots and a footy jumper, and explaining Aussie rules as seen by a guy who's been in Australia 3 days, his first social outing is a game of Aussie rules, and he thinks the umpire's name is, hi, you bloody mug. Hi, you bloody mug. He's the bloke. You know, anyway, so that's how it started. Then I developed Harry Carey, a failed kamikaze pilot that turned left at Israel, landed at the back of Dubbo. he had a great story to tell. Then Slugger Mullet. I always had Chooker Marody. Chooker, for anybody who's got any of my albums, there's a character, and I often do him together. You know, I'll say, Chook, can you get...
Excuse me, Mr. Chook, do you mind... Mr. Elliot, we've just had a bit of an accident in the truck and that.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't want to know about it.
Yeah, but, Mr. Elliot, we got a 4-metre truck, as you know, and we found a 3.5-metre bridge.
Oh, for...
Well, the copper come up, he said, stuck, are we? I said, no, we're delivering the bridge.
Get out! And so... Chooker is like 4 octaves higher than me, so I have to work him. And I've got to tell you a funny story. I was in hospital not long ago, and I had a little pancreatitis thing attack, you know, and they said, oh, you've got to get off the grog. And I thought, that's good, I've been off it for 30 years. But it didn't matter. It wasn't that. But they said they had to give me a suppository. Right, because I was a little blocked. So the nurse come in, young nurse, she was younger than me, she was 50. And she said,
well, it's not hard, most people are younger than you, Carl.
Yeah, I know. And she said, Col Elliott. And I said, oh, I thought she'd recognise, she'll be gentle, you know. Anyway, so she's got to do the suppository. She said, oh, I'm sorry, I've come to. I said, well, that'll be something around the kitchen table you can talk about, you know. You give me a suppository. She said, oh, I used to go to Twin Towns. This is a club in Queensland. We used to go to Twin Towns and see you all the time. And my favourite was Chooka. I love to see Chooka. You couldn't do a little bit of Chooka for me. I said, well, when are you going to do the suppository? And she said, well, soon. I said, well, you've got to hold back a little bit, because I've got to go up 4 octaves. Now, if I go up 4 octaves
and start talking like Chooka,
and your finger's in the wrong spot, you could lose a finger, because there's a lot of pressure here. And well, she started laughing. I said, it's like you're getting a hunk of coal shoved up my ass 2 weeks later, you'd have a diamond, you know. I said, so she started to laugh and couldn't do the job. So she called her girlfriend in and started to tell her the story. She started laughing. She couldn't do the job. I'm standing there with my pants around my frigging ankles, and I've got two nurses who can't give me a suppository, and they called the matron in, and I was dead set. It was like the Wizard of Oz, the wicked bloody witch. And I thought, oh Jesus, everything closed up. Anyway, that was the worst thing. Chooka is a literal character. He's great. You know, he says,
I was a house painter for about 5 years. I never thought I'd finish the frigging joint, you know.
He's that sort of character, easy to work.
Where do you come up with, like, so you, does the voice come first or does the personality come first? Like,
okay, Chooka, I'll give you, for instance, I'll try and make this a short story. I've always had Chooka.
Chooka was always on the ship, and he was, hi fellows, what's happening today? And they look at me and say, dickhead, you know.
So we had a new officer, sub-lieutenant, came on board HMAS Stewart that I was on. And he came on board and he walked down. We'd just gone to sea to do exercises, and he's a raw bone. I mean, this guy has only been in the Navy a few months, and he's an officer training. And I'm an old salt by this time, you know, I've been in about 5 years. So I walked up to him and all the boys around the quarter deck, and I said,
good morning, sir. A lovely day at sea, sir. I'm looking out there and I can see fish, sir. If you look at those little ripples out there, and how do you enjoy the ship so far, sir? Has it been a good experience? And he's looking at me going, oh, Jesus Christ. So I kept it going and I said, anyway, sir, I am part of the quarter deck able Seaman Elliot, and these are my compadres here, and they're all looking down and trying to walk away. Sir, if there's anything you need or you need to know about the quarter deck, I certainly am here to help you, sir.
And I've walked away. Well, I kept this going for about a week and a half, and all of a sudden I got called down to my divisional officer, who called me down and said, Lieutenant's been my divisional officer for a few years. He said, Elliot, what are you doing to what are you doing to this midshipman? Yeah? And I said, nothing, sir. He said, he thinks there's something wrong with you. he said, what? And I said,
Nothing at all, sir. I was just telling him
about. And I did the voice, and he started to laugh. He said, keep it going. So I did. And down the wardroom, he'd say, you know, he'd be having tea, and he'd say, has anybody had any problems with Elliot? Is he all there? Is there something wrong with this guy? He comes up to me every morning, and he jabber jaws on it. Anyway, the worst part of it was they put me on watch with him, and I was on the midnight watch, and I was on the bridge. And my job as a bosun, as the bosun's mate, was to wake the hands at 6 a.m. So you'd get on the blower, you know, and you'd say, call the hands, call the hands, call the hands. Wakey, wakey, wakey. Dress of the day, number 10s, you know, we had all different numbers for the thing. So I picked up the thing and he said, no, Elliot, no. And I said,
okay, everybody, it's time to get up and out.
And I'm doing all this stupid stuff. And he's grabbed the mic. I said, dress of the day is number 10. Is that the little blue shorts, sir? Oh, get off. And he's given to me and then he's taken over. I got called down to my division office. He said, you've got to keep going with this for a while. We got to Japan, and the end of the story, I'll cut it short. I kept the poor bugger going like that with that voice for months. We got to Japan. I was in a bar, and I was talking to my mates, and I had my back to the room, and my mates were laughing. I was telling them a story, and all of a sudden, this guy came up behind me and listened to my real voice. And he said, Elliot, and I turned, oh, hello, sir, don't start. And I had to tell him what had happened, and he just cried and cried. Kept him going for 2 months. That was Chooka. So Chooka was easy to do. When I got into comedy, Chooker became a roadie.
So when I'm getting the impression, Cole, from listening to you, that causing mischief and a bit of trouble is something that you don't mind participating in. Would that be a fair comment?
That's a fair comment. I love it. I tell you a lovely Chooker story. We were in Childers and we were doing a show, and Bernie got my manager, Bernie. God bless you, Bernie. Bernie's been passed for a few years now, but Bernie was my manager for 37 years, and we travelled all over the world. Anyway, Bernie rings me and he says, Cole, he said, I've got this guy on the phone from Chinchilla and they're having a wedding in town the night that we're there. And I said, oh, you're kidding. And it's only a small town. Half the bloody town are going to the wedding. Well, this guy is the best man, and he's really concerned because he wants to go to your show so bad, and he's wondering if you could call in and just say hello at the wedding party when they're giving the speeches. So I got together with this best man and I dressed as Chooker. And I broke in on the service. I grabbed the microphone off him and I said, Mary, what are you doing marrying this jerk? The gay thing that I was into was only temporary. I didn't think you'd piss off and leave me. And I did this. The mother was trying to crawl across the table to get me. Her father wanted to punch me. Half the audience knew what was going on. Half the rest of them didn't. And I eventually pulled my head off and I said, you have a lovely time. And the whole reception came back to my show afterwards, which was great. Yeah.
And
a lot of fun.
You've been, like, obviously you've been going for a very, very long time. Mm. You clearly love touring and you love that kind of aspect of it.
Look, I go to places, they still vote for Menzies. I sort of still move around a lot. I get a lot of requests, like Slugger Mulligan. Slugger was another one of my characters, a bush poet that misogynistic, and he says, yeah, bloody woke up this morning, bloody not looking real good. And I said to the missus, what are you whinging about, you silly old cow? And, I said, what would you do if I said I won tat lotto? She said, well, I get my harp and leave. I said, good, here's $12.50, piss off. So I love doing him. I love doing the characters, but I love doing Cole too. And I come out as Cole and I do a big fat Cole, and then, I'm not fat anymore, I've been on diet. I do a big section of Cole, and then I play a clip, or I have a guitarist with me or whatever. They'll do a number while I change into Chooker or Slugger or Harry Carey or one of my favourite. You'd love this one. I got into gardening for a while and I wrote this piece, Arthur C. Stork, the gardening expert with a difference. And he whistled like a seal. What was that guy's seal that used to? So this is a gardening expert. And I used to say, welcome to Getting Rooted with Arthur C. Stork. And I used to have the Paulinus Hansonus Garbus Horribilis. I had all these terrible plants. I love doing all that stuff. It's good fun, good sketch stuff.
And what about touring itself? You got a fantastic audience in front of you. Is it something that you just love? Do you love getting on the road? You love, doesn't matter where you are, you just love getting up there and doing your thing?
Yeah, I think so, Goff. It's very hard not to do what we do. Yeah. It's very, very hard not to do what we do. Yourself, you've done stand-up. Well, you do stand-up. Look, you get an audience in front of you. It's just so good, I can't believe one night, the best time I had, I was at doing a Twin Towns show and I got in the lift and I went up the front way. Usually I go in the vegetable thing because it comes out at the dressing rooms, but it was full of veggies. How dare they? So I got in the front and I was standing, this lady, and there's a poster of me and I'm standing in front of the poster. She could see the poster and see me. And she said, oh, hello. And I said, g'day, here you go. And, thinking. And she said, are you here for the night? I said, yeah, I'm here for the night. I said, what about yourself? She said, oh, yeah. She said, I've got to go to this bloody Cole Elliott show. My husband loves him. She said, I can't stand it. She said, he swears. She said, no. And I'm thinking she's taking the mick out of me. But she's not. She's not looked at the post and not looked at my face properly. And I said, oh, yeah. I said, yeah, it's a shame. I said, I've got to go too. And I said, my wife loves him. She said, well, isn't that funny? Not many women are into him, I don't think. And all that. Anyway, we talked for about two floors up, and then she said, at least I get a good meal tonight. And I said, well, we both scored out, we're kindred spirits, so I get a good meal out of this too. Anyway, I said, I'll see you later. And I thought she might turn around and say, see you tonight, Cole. But she didn't. She went on. So I walked on stage, and bugger me, if she's not three rows in front of me looking at me, and she went, oh. And I saw her face drop and I said, do you want to tell the room or do you want me to tell her? That was the best night I had. I loved it.
That's very, very, I like that. So that's very good. Now, I'm assuming, because we've got to wrap it up in a second, but I'm guessing, I can only just tell by the way you carry yourself, you love doing what you do.
Mm, yeah.
Is this something that you're going to do until the day you drive? I mean, Ralph is, I had a conversation with Ralph, actually, and he complains mercilessly that you drag him out on the road and you just refuse to stop touring.
And is
this something you can just see yourself doing forever?
I can't see myself doing anything else. Look, I tried gardening. I even tried to grow a little bit of pot. I had 3 plants and I killed them. I grew it because my daughter had some stomach trouble and I heard that you could make some juice out of it. So I said, so my mate who had some said, I'll give you some. And he gave me 3 plants and I killed them.
Well, all reports, it's hard to kill.
To me, how do you kill weed? I said, I don't know. I never smoked it. I've had a joint, like we've all had a joint. I don't drink. I don't do that. But I've had a joint way back on the road, but I never got into it. I thought, oh, yeah, that was good, but moving on. I had all my drinks at once in the Navy. I haven't had a drink for 41 years, believe it or not.
Wow.
And nor is Ralph. But we do laugh a lot, and it's very hard not to do this. Look, you know, on this Friday, I'm at the Bow Desert RSL.
Right.
And they can only get, like, I think they got 68 people in COVID, and they said, mate, I'm coming down. So I get paid for it, but I'd do it for nothing. I really would. I love it.
That's exactly right. I mean, I do what I do, and I love Beer Nuts Productions and all the films and stuff. I absolutely love what I do. And I think if you didn't enjoy it, I mean, you speak about it with such passion in your voice. Mm. If you didn't enjoy it, well, firstly, you're at the age where you could retire and put your feet up, but you choose to keep going because you love it, yeah?
Well, I do. I do love it. And also I get to do a little bit of charity work too. I do a lot for the kids. I do a lot for the Vietnam vets. I'm a vet myself. And any chance I get to help, I tell you what I just got given, which I was just so stoked. I was given a quilt of valour, which is made by people who just want to say thanks to the people who served. And the most beautiful quilt they gave me at a veterans meeting and said, Cole, we want to, you know, they realised how young I was and how it affected me. And it did affect me. You know, Vietnam, I thought to myself, oh, God, every time the gun went off, how many people did we kill today? It affects you, you know, it does. Comedy has been a great thing for me.
Would you say an outlet? Like
it is. Yeah, it's an outlet. And it's certainly, and I wrote a book, and it was certainly, it gave me a release. is that the word? What's the word?
Like a positive outlet. Yeah,
it is. And so if I can make people laugh and make people enjoy, and I do relentlessly take the mick, I take the piss something terrible, you know. As I go on stage, I take the mick out of the English, Irish, the Kiwis, the Greeks, the Kiwis, frigging Kiwis. She just got back in. So, you know, there's so much, and our politicians give us so much to work with.
Yes.
So I'm forever writing. I'm sitting down writing lines, and I'll walk on stage some nights and I'll do a show, and the next night Ralph will say, oh, you know, you did, oh, and I'll do a different show, and he'll say, why didn't you do? I said, well, I went off on a different tangent. So there's so much material there, you know.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Cole. I really do appreciate it. If people want to learn more about Cole Elliott, how can they do it? Where do they look?
Well, go to my website, go to YouTube's, go to Amazon, you'll see my books, you'll see my DVDs, there's CDs and all the rest of it. But I think on the 13th of November, I'm at the Caloundra Powerboat Club. And then I fly up to Yeppoon and do one for the vets. Then I'll have another month off because I need it. And I'll do, a little bit here and there. You know, I'm sort of moving around. Once we get out of COVID, I think it'll start to move again. And I think that's what's going to happen. But keep me at Bow Desert. Yep, next Friday night. I'm looking forward to that.
Absolutely. So, ladies and gentlemen, just if you want to know more about this man, just Google Cole Elliott, YouTube Cole Elliott. Just whatever you need to do, just look this bastard up. So it's all about Cole Elliott. So
why not?
Why not?
Now, hey, Scott.
Also, just remember, folks, beernutsproductions.com for all your entertainment needs. And make sure you like and subscribe the podcast. Make sure you leave a positive review because that always, you know, that helps. And, make sure you enjoy Cole's work and enjoy Beer Nuts Productions' work. And we will see you next time.